This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard.
New data from the Pew Research Center shows how working parents share parenting and household responsibilities. The number of two-parent households where both parents are working full-time has risen sharply since the 1970s. That shift means family life is changing here in the United States.
Pew released their survey earlier this month, and results show that over half of working parents say it's difficult to balance parenting and working. And we want to hear from you on this at 800-642-1234. Does your family have two working parents? Do you struggle being a parent and working full or maybe part-time? What is your experience like? Call in now at 800-642-1234, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Stephanie Kuntz is with us now to look at this new survey. She's a professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College and director of research and public education for the Council on Contemporary Families. Stephanie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think we all probably have noticed this long-term trend, more families with two employed parents, maybe full-time parents. But to set the scene for us, how long has this change been going on, and has it been a steady growth or fits and starts?
Well, it's been a pretty steady growth. If you go back to 1960, almost half of mothers were full-time mothers, and there was really only a tiny percentage of young kids who had women who worked. And today, of course, 70% of kids have every parent in the household involved in the labor force. Women's now dual-earner families, like you said, are the vast majority of families, even though it's true that mothers of young children tend to work part-time. The majority of them work full-time as well. So it's been a huge change. There have been a few ups and downs. Every once in a while, somebody announces that, oh, moms are quitting the workforce, but it always turns out to simply be some sort of dip in the employment that is equally distributed among people who are not parents as well.
This is a big change, and there have been growing pains. We haven't settled into a new normal, have we, on this?
No. We invented all of our work policies and social policies in the 1950s, this aberrant time when when the largest number of kids ever were being raised by a stay-at-home mom and a full-time working father who could count on keeping his job in a way that people can't today. Our unemployment policies, everything are worked around that, and our emotional expectations of family life. This was also a period in the 60s when women were told that they were exclusively responsible for kids. They were the only experts in it. That a man, this is a direct quote from a sociologist of the 1960s, that a man who liked to change diapers or play with his kids or give his kid a bottle might be suspected of having a little too much fat on the inner thigh. So there was this contempt for male involvement at home and for women involvement in the workplace that still hangs over our heads, gives us expectations, and then even as our expectations and desires change, we run into the wall that the United States is the most backward country in the developed world in terms of the policies that it has to help parents combine work and family and fit them together in a reasonable way.
We'll get more into those policies in just a few, but this new survey shows over half of working parents, these two employed parents, say they're struggling with balancing home and work life. Talk us through how they're being stretched here.
Well, they're being stretched in a number of ways. And by the way, U.S. parents report greater stresses, both males and females, and greater levels of work-family conflict than any other country in the Western world. And that has to do, I think, with these terrible policies that we have. But we're being stretched. People in low-income jobs are stretched because they have no predictability. They have much too much flexibility in their work. Their work hours may be changed, which makes it impossible.
Flexible for the employer, not the employee.
Exactly.
You're saying, I get it.
And then you get in the higher income, the high professionals. We have this weird change that's occurred. It used to be that the best jobs were the ones we called them bankers' hours, when you had more flexibility in time. You didn't have so many work hours. But it's the highest paid workers who engage in overwork, who are more likely to work more than 50 hours a week, which makes it almost impossible to juggle work and family with two people in the workforce. And so parents are trying to come to terms with the fact that we don't have these policies, and there's lots of other ones. We don't have affordable, quality child care. The schools differ, so parents have to worry about where they go to school. None of these problems are true in the developed Western nations or the Nordic nations, and that really decreases parental stress. And then, of course, we're such an individualistic nation that instead of recognizing that this is not the fault of our partner or our community, but of the social policies that we have, we also, I think, then tend to turn on each other to ask, are you doing enough? Are you doing enough? What's going on there? And so that ratchets the stress up even more.
So we treat it more as maybe a time management, a self-help kind of problem.
That's right. As though if we had 50 hours in the day or 80 hours, we could somehow manage this. Now, I think parents are actually doing the best they can. There are a few things that stand in the way of evenness, but on the whole, there's just been extraordinary progress on the part of men and women in terms of coming to terms with these new ideas. But the policies prevent men from gaining the experience they need at home because we do not have the kind of policies that encourage parental leave and paternal involvement, which is what teaches men to take full involvement in the home. And, of course, that lack of policies force women to take time off, which reinforces their secondary status in the workplace, but their primary status at home, so that they tend to be, even when the work itself is shared, they tend to still be the supervisors, the managers, and that's an awful stress on them that they often resent.
Talking to Stephanie Kuntz from the Evergreen State College, looking at family life and family stress in the era of two breadwinners. Both parents employed stretches families pretty thin. Now, Stephanie, you mentioned the idea that the 50s were the aberration. That was the weird time. A lot of times people seem to talk about the 50s as in some ways the good old days, the normal times that we've strayed from. Do you think that attitude is maybe one of the things keeping us from making policies that match our current reality?
Yes, and I think particularly our politicians and policymakers and the CEOs of most companies who come from that era and who are most likely to have the leftover family forms from that era have really had a hard time catching up. But in fact, it was a total fluke. Through most of history, there was no such thing as a male breadwinner. Women and men, in colonial days, wives were called yoke mates because they were expected to work right alongside their husbands. Up until the 1920s and 30s, most families depended either on the labor of wives or on their children's labor. It wasn't until the 1950s that a really large number of small children were brought up in homes where the woman was available to take care of them and the men were not. Now, the gender ideologies that produced that made women either happy to do it or just forced to do it because they couldn't get jobs and they were there was so much prejudice against them, and the work policies that made it possible for men to support a family on one income, and the work securities, those are all gone, and yet we haven't caught up with this as a system, even though I think on the ground we've seen extraordinary change. Men have tripled the amount of child care they do, doubled the amount of housework. Women now say that having a man who shares bread, work, and chores is not only one of the highest predictors of marital satisfaction, but one of the highest predictors of their sexual attraction to him. So we all want this stuff, but it's just hard to put it into action in our current system.
And staying with the idea of those modern-day yoke mates and how they split the work in the household, you and others have written that while men are doing more housework, maybe women are doing a little less still, women are doing a lot more than men. There used to be a notion that it's a matter of lazy men not wanting to do this stuff. You say it's a little more complicated than that.
I think it's much more complicated than that. First of all, this idea that there's a second shift that women do in the home has just been disproven by time diaries. It is true that women do more housework, but most of this and childcare, but most of that unevenness occurs in the early years of infancy. When we look together at men and women with children and we add up the paid work hours, men still tend to go to work and more hours after a baby comes, women tend to cut back. So when we look at the overall load of paid and unpaid work, it's fairly even, except in those infant years. There's still a couple of things that are uneven about it. And that, as I say, come back to the fact that we have such lousy work-family policies. Because somebody generally has to stay home, and it's more likely to be the woman for long periods of time, she becomes the expert. She, and this affects their relationship in both sides. The man, even if he wants to help, isn't quite sure what to do, just as when we women entered the workforce, we, you know, were a little hesitant about how to become supervisors and managers, and we would ask for advice. Well, that's how men are in the home when they haven't had paternity leave, and we know from the experience of other countries that did institute paternity leave that it totally changes these dynamics. Men become much more confident about their ability to do housework, to do childcare, and they keep doing it after they go back to work. And in fact, conflict over housework and childcare really declines in those homes where men have taken extended paternity leaves. But in the meantime, women are home. They've been taking these kind of leaves. It hurts them in the long run in the workforce. It holds back their participation and their financial accumulation and their promotions. But it also reinforces a certain thing that sometimes we women have to look out for. And that is the sense that, yes, well, we are the experts. So we'll tend to, sociologists call it gatekeeping. We'll say to the guy, well, that's not the way you do it. And, of course, that doesn't really help encourage him to take that responsibility.
We're talking to Stephanie Kuntz from the Council on Contemporary Families about new data from the Pew Research Center on working parents. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you stretched thin at home, balancing work life and home life as a parent? How do you and your partner split up the household responsibilities? What would help you, policy-wise, at your business, government, or help from your family? 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Take your calls after a look at the latest news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Stephanie Kuntz about a new survey from the Pew Research Center on how working parents balance having children, having a household, and having a job. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, thoughts, experiences. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We will go right to our callers now. Dean is on the line in La Crosse. Dean, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Oh, well, I was just interested in this topic because my fiance and I are new parents. We have a 3-month-old boy, and we're definitely trying to switch things up and come up with creative ideas to be able to, keep the workload even and, you know, make our money stretch. So, it's definitely been a struggle, but we're loving every minute of it.
So what kind of congratulations, first of all, but what's how are you getting creative there?
So my fiance actually just came up with the idea, you know, one of us are going to switch our job to a third shift in order to try to eliminate our daycare costs, which is quite pricey.
Dean, thank you so much for sharing that. Good luck to you. Stephanie, getting creative there. You could see downsides. Maybe they're not going to see each other that much in those early years.
Well, that is a downside. I mean, the upside is that it gives him the hands-on experience that a lot of fathers don't get. But it's also important, like they say on the planes, put your oxygen mask on yourself first. Your relationship also counts. So they're going to have to pay a lot of attention to that. But, you know, this is one, what he raises shows us why. There's not just one policy. We often talk about this as a woman's issue, and I think that we're clear now that it's increasingly not just a woman's issue. It's a caregiver's issue, not just parents. A lot of people have older relatives they're caring for, too. But we also talk about it as though there's one policy that will solve it, like paid maternity leave or paid paternity leave, both. And I think they have to be both parents have to take them. They can't transfer them to the other. But you also need a whole package of policies. You need affordable, quality child care so people don't have to disrupt their lives that way and their sleep patterns and their relationship. And you also need another thing that America doesn't have that every European country has, and that is paid vacation and sick days. We do not have those guaranteed, but that's what parents need after the newborn time to take care of short-term emergencies or short-term kinds of opportunities even to be with your kids. So we really need a package of care policies, and other countries have them, and other countries are thriving. There's no reason we can't.
Dean, thanks for the call, and good luck. We'll go next to Andrew in St. Paul, Minnesota. Andrew, hi.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. Yes. Are you there?
Go ahead, Andrew.
Sorry about that. Yeah, so I recently engaged, been engaged since Valentine's Day, and my fiance's a dentist, and I'm a high school teacher. I know we, you know, haven't started the family yet or anything, but there was some struggles early on, especially because I, you know, being a guy, sort of seemed like I was assuming more of the traditional female role, while her being the major breadwinner, assuming more of the, you know, male roles in the relationship. So, you know, me being kind of a traditional guy kind of threw me off. Hmm. But over time, you know, for me, it's, you know, I had to accept, as well as, you know, get that confidence that this is a woman I love and this is a woman I want to be with. And it really, at the end of the day, doesn't matter. And I think very often you got to have that solid foundation of love, trust, and respect, mutual respect. And really, you know, if you can be compatible, then it can work.
Andrew, thanks a lot for that call. I want to bring Stephanie on this. I mean, this is fodder for many a sitcom, right? The wife has the major breadwinner role. Oh, what a complicated thing this is. This is not all that weird at this point in time, is it, Stephanie?
It is not weird. And one of the things that men are gradually discovering, we find that some men still are threatened by this, and the ones most likely to be are the ones who have this narrow identity of themselves as a male breadwinner, and a very materialistic kind of idea of what it means to be successful. So when they're not earning more than the guy, than the woman is, it hurts their pride, and it actually hurts their health. And sometimes women tend to try to overcompensate for it, you know, make up for it. What your caller said is exactly right. You've got to hit it head on and recognize that there are delights to be found in being more flexible about your roles. Women need to learn that, you know, men are good for other things than just, you know, scaring the mouse away. And actually, we can set mouse traps ourselves. And women and men both need to learn that this sharing tends to be very, very satisfying in relationships. And in fact, I can tell you one set of wonderfully encouraging, let us say inspiring to most young couples, it should be. In marriages and relationships formed since the early 1990s, researchers have found with now 4 or 5 different studies that couples who share housework and childcare equally report the highest marital satisfaction, the most sexual satisfaction, and, get this, the most frequent sex. So there's some relationship benefits to doing this.
All right, well, that's a good place to leave it. Stephanie, thanks. As always, good to talk to you again.
Oh, my pleasure, Rob.
We've been talking to Stephanie Kuntz, Professor of History and Family Studies at the Evergreen State College. She's also Director of Research and Public Education for the Council on Contemporary Families. She was with us to talk about a new survey from the Pew Research Center about how working parents balance having children and having a job. By the way, you can keep sharing your stories, your thoughts, observations, maybe solutions to some of the problems we've been talking about. You can do that on the Central Time Facebook page. I think we've got a discussion started up there now. If you have a quick note, though, as always, you can tweet us at Central Time WPR.